Accession number 20588, Reel 5.
This is Walter Cuss, Reel 5, Antwerp.
So you worked your way up to Antwerp?
Well, we went from Antwerp then up to the airborne forces now were landing at Arnhem and Eindhoven and so forth. And the 53rd Division came up then on the left flank of the main corridor to carry out bridging over River Lommel.
So tell me.
Not the River Lommel, the town of Lommel, the canal, the Wessen Canal, not the Wessen Canal. Anyway, it was over this canal we had to do this bridging. And it became a divisional engineer effort. All the four companies of the division were involved in building this bridge at Lommel to protect the left flank of the airborne corridor. We advanced so far, and then we came to a halt. In the meantime, the airborne forces had landed at Eindhoven and a place called Grave and also Arnhem itself. Unfortunately, the Arnhem airdrop wasn't successful.
So tell me, that's the strategy that was going on. Tell me about when you were told you were leaving Antwerp. How long had you been there?
Oh, about a fortnight, you'd imagine.
Right.
Doing a lot of refitting.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then we moved out then to this bridge, a triple Bailey bridge was built over the river, over this canal at Lommel, ostensibly to protect the left flank of the airborne, so to stop the Germans. Mm-hmm. Right, got this bridge, done the bridge. We then went to a place called Roisel, which is, infantry were involved quite considerably in this bridge area, in this place of Roisel, to push the Germans back. Eventually, then we moved to the corridor, Nijmegen, where we stopped for some time. In fact, we were going to stop there for the winter.
Right. Let me stop you there, because I want to come back and get some of your impressions. So when you were leaving Antwerp, did you know where you were going?
No, none of us know. Only the officers know these things. You see, you get a rough inkling as to where you're going, but the orders don't come out. I mean, if we're going to do a job tomorrow, the CO wouldn't know anything about it till tonight, probably. You see,
right.
It fits in with a pattern. Mm-hmm. It all fits in with a pattern where the infantry are going or whatever's necessary, and they study the situation and decide what certain people are going to be used on it, whether they're going to be engineers, or what artillery program you're going to use, and so forth.
Right. So what did you know about the Arnhem landings?
Well, I saw the Arnhem landings, aircraft going over on a Sunday morning,
right.
hundreds
then?
Of them. Well, we were more or less in a place, in some village now, after we'd come out from Antwerp, you see.
Right.
I mean, we stop in these places and you wait for orders, you see, or whatever you're going to do.
So you saw all the planes coming
over? All the planes going over and
so
all the rest
what
of
was
it.
Happening
yep. Oh, knew what was happening, yeah.
Yeah.
Knew what was happening.
Well,
of course, everybody thought the war was going to finish then, obviously. Oh, yes, that will be finished now in 24 hours.
Mm.
Now we're dropping there, but it didn't work out, did it?
So what time of day did they start coming over?
Midday, on a Sunday it was. I don't know exact date. Sometime in September, 24th or 25th, something like that.
So how long were they coming over you for?
All day and the following day.
Really? So you knew that our troops were dropping.
That's right. Of course, as you probably everybody knows, that failed, and of course, that's another story because that involves somebody else, obviously.
Yes, yeah. So, what did you hear about the way the Arnhem landings had gone?
Well, eventually came back to say that they didn't achieve their objectives, and they were retreat coming back over the river. You see, that's as far as we know about it.
Right. So you didn't have any contact with them?
We didn't have any contact with them, no. It wasn't on our section, you see. We were on the left flank, as
right.
I told you, 15th Scottish and the 53rd Division.
Right. So after Arnhem, you went...
Then we moved up the corridor then, afterwards, and we went into Nijmegen on the island, which you call an island. The reason it's an island, you've got the River Rhine and you've got the River Maas, and this place is in between. So we were up there now, and we crossed over the railway bridge at Nijmegen, and we got billeted in a fruit farm on the other side of the river, which we virtually more or less static then, stopped their static. We were getting shelled and one thing or another. And orders came through, no, we were going to build a hutted camp there, and we were going to stop there for the winter, sort of protecting the place. Anything, all this was changed then. It was decided now that Sertogenbosch in the Netherlands was going to be attacked. And we moved to a place called Oss, O-S-S, where we prepared for this attack on Sertogenbosch. And this attack on Sertogenbosch started at 23rd of October at 6 a.m. in the morning in 1944. This was preceded, we were supported by armor 7th Armored Division, and eventually down the road we ran into a minefield. Now some of our chaps, not my company but divisional engineers, went forward to lift these mines. We advanced down the road then to a place called Neuland, and that was captured and made an attack on Sertogenbosch. Now this is the infantry doing the attack, we were in support. Mm-hmm. Eventually when we got into Sertogenbosch, most of the bridges over the canals, because Sertogenbosch had the River Dommel and numerous Wilhelmina Canal and numerous other canals, were attacked, blown up bridges. So we rested our CO as a senior officer in the engineers out of the four companies.
Do you remember his name?
Major Bannister, CO Bannister. He went forward to survey these bridges. In fact, before the attack, he was on leave in Brussels and he had to be recalled. So he came back and he went down to the river to survey the necessary crossing. We're going to build a Class 40 Bailey Bridge over the canal lock. This was in daylight he went down, and the CRE, Lieutenant Colonel Clark, decided to build the bridge, and Major Bannister said, and he told me himself, Major Bannister, because I had a lot of discussions with him, that he wasn't going to build the bridge in daylight because he was under mortar and machine gun fire. So the CRE threatened to court-martial him because refusing to give orders. However, this all materialised now that we decided to build a bridge at 19 hours that night, and the bridge was completed by midnight.
So right? that was very quick, one job.
Oh, yeah, one big span, about the width, just over the width between this and the other street over there. Mm. And all the bridges got blown up there, so the divisional engineers spent some considerable time in Sertogenbosch building bridges over the Dommel Canal, the Wilhelmina Canal, and other canals in the area. And we were there about a fortnight, divisional, the two brigades, 160 Brigade, 71st Brigade, 158 Brigade.
So that was a quite intense work for
you. Oh, it was there. Yeah. There was quite a few bridges there. Yeah. Quite
I mean,
a few
were
bridges.
Were you getting tired? I mean, you were doing...
Oh, yes. Work. Well, you had to get on with it, you see. Yeah.
What sort of hours a day were you working?
You were working around the clock. Round the clock.
Did that sort of, I mean, did that sort of bond the unit even more? I mean, you'd been through a lot together, hadn't you?
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, as I said, we're a bonded unit. That's why I say it's the 53rd was a great unit, a great division. I mean, I could show you commendations by army commanders and all the rest of it, you see. But then, as I said, we were there for about a fortnight doing different things and so forth.
What did you see of the Germans then?
Well, it's a funny thing about all this. You never seem to see any Germans at all. That's the point about it, you see. But they were there, all right. And there's a lot of it was a night operation, you see. Most of the bridges we build at night. And that's part of the job, building them at night. And that's where the training comes in again, you see. Anyhow, we were there now for about a fortnight doing these bridges. Now, of course, some of the brigades move on to newer things. Now, the other next place we went to was a place called Roisel, where we came under, or the infantry came under intense fire and so forth. And they had quite a job taking this place, and there's a canal there called the Wessen Canal. Now, the infantry had to make a large enough bridgehead up there for the engineers to bridge the river there, the Wessen Canal, which we eventually done. Then there comes a bit of obscure after that, because we were moving about here, there and everywhere, up on the Mars and different places. The Zig Canal was another place where we were working, where we had the support of an armoured engineer regiment, 222nd, I think it was, Field Squadron, who put a scissors bridge across the Zig Canal, off a tank, carried on a tank, a scissors bridge, and got over there. Now, one of our drivers misjudged his position, and he, of course, his two legs like that, and the wheels fit in between these two legs. Of course, he misjudged getting on the bridge, and he went in the canal, the lorry and all the gear with it. Of course, they left him there, that's it. Any vehicle gets damaged is left. Rear of Eschen come up and sort that out. And then we got over this canal, and we got on the River Maas, a place called Roermond and Venlo. Now, on the opposite side of the river was a German airfield in Venlo, and they used to come over at night dropping flares. Anyhow, a lot of things went on piecemeal there. I can't sort of put them together because so many different little things went on. You might have a party of men going out and repairing a road or a gap or something like that. It's got damaged, or the road is collapsed and it's got to be made up again for vehicles to go up and down. So that was the sort of thing we were doing then. So now then we come to a place now, village, and we went into reserve. Now all of a sudden an order comes out, big German offensive in the Ardennes. Now this is up, we're up in Holland now. Big offensive comes off in the Ardennes in Belgium. 30 Corps were going down there. We were going down. 53rd Division going down there. The 15th Scottish. 6th Airborne Division brought back from England at a rush. Not a parachute troop, but infantry. And numerous other odds and sods went in there. And we were in the Ardennes for about a fortnight. And this was over Christmas 1944-45. New Year as well. And our primary job in the Ardennes was mining bridges on the River Meuse to stop the Germans advancing, because the object of the German army at that time was the recapture of Antwerp, though cutting off the American and British forces. That's in the north, Americans in the south. We were down there now mining these bridges, 18 bridges we actually mined altogether, ready for blowing up, and they were ready to blow. And we were doing one job there, getting the bridge, and there's a big mansion down the road, not so far down the road, about 100 yards down the road, and this Belgian, a very prosperous looking Belgian, came up. I hope you're not going to blow that bridge up. So officer, Ted Lutus, the officer, said, well, why not? He said, well, you'll damage my house. So Ted blew his top and said, I couldn't care a bugger whether you blow your bridge up or not, like, whether I blow your house up or not. I've got a drop of whiskey, it might be a bit thick now. I don't care a damn whether I blow your bridge up, blow your house up or not, he said. So anyhow, in the eventuality, it wasn't blown up. But where did it go from there? Oh yes, we went back up the north then, and in the Rysel Forest, and a crucial place that was.
Well, tell me about what sort of terrain is it, you know, saying it's a forest.
Ardennes, snow, it was hilly. Well, the forest of the Ardennes in Belgium is hilly. It's a wooded area, vastly wooded area. Of course, that's how he was able to get all his stuff together, because it was in woods. Nobody knew anything about it. And through bad intelligence on the Americans' part, that they didn't know anything about it. Because he had all green divisions in there, the Americans. Just come over from straight from America, some of them. Anyhow, we went down there now and we got that sorted out. Now, we went back then, straight up to the Rysel Forest, where a five-division front, we were attached to the Canadian Army then. We were under armed orders of the Canadian Army. The 53rd advanced through that forest, in the centre of the forest. We took the forest, all the rest were on the outside. And we were in action for a month continuously. And it was all sorts of jobs we were doing in there. We were laying corduroy roads, we were bridging gaps, bridging bomb craters even. The night before the attack, the bombers from England, Lancasters, dropped, there were over 500 aircraft, and they dropped bombs with craters as much as 30 foot across, which had to be bridged. You couldn't fill them in. Where was the material coming from? Nowhere. In addition to that, he laid roads with battle mines underneath there, and underneath that lot again was German, French 75 millimeter shells ready to blow up. Now, some of the units had to get all this up and sort of get these bombs sorted out and defused and one thing or another. But that's a long story. That is what goes
so
on with that.
So what work were you doing there? I mean, you were mobile all
the time. Oh, yeah, we were living in the vehicles then, obviously. Yeah, there's nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. In fact...
How rough was life then?
Very rough. If on a par with the Second and First World War. Very rough. It was like it. I'm going to say, artillery were firing. we were working on one particular job and a shell burst in the gun and blew all the men to smithereens up in the trees everywhere. And... it was a real dense forest, though, and the shells were bursting in the trees, and of course, all the shrapnel was going all over the place. Our primary job over there was repairing roads and so forth, and all the rest of it, and that sort of thing. And a lighter vein, we got in a farm, and there was a pig there, and we had a butcher with us, so we killed a pig, and we had roast pork for about a month, and chickens from one thing or another. We were virtually living off the land.
Yeah. So, what support did you have?
Support?
Yeah, I mean, in the way of rations and, you know...
We had our own... The rations was organised, and no doubt about it, it was highly organised then.
So they were brought to you all the time?
The cooks were working behind us, you see. They cooked all the food and used to bring it up in what they call hay boxes. Mm-hmm. Like a thermos type of thing, you see. And everything was brought up like that. And, of course, the forest was that bad, you couldn't use ordinary vehicles in there, so we had... an American weasel, a little small tracked vehicle. And used to bring all the rations up in that, because that thing would go anywhere, like, see.
So how did everyone cope with it? I mean, you're under huge strain now. Did that begin to show a bit?
By that time, you see, you got really hard into all sorts of conditions, and the weather was bad. What happened there, you see, previous to the attack, the roads were solid. They'd frozen stiff. Of course, a thaw set in, and that everything collapsed. You know what a thaw causes? If you've got frozen water in a road or anything like that, and it thaws, it all breaks up, you see? So all that had to repair. In fact, we had to close some roads while we repaired them. And we worked round the clock on that. Round the clock. We were absolutely deadbeat on this particular job. We got through this forest eventually. It took us a month to get through it. And we were in action non-stop for over a month. And we're the only division that was in action and stopped for over a month. And we got to a place called Wheeze then, W-W-W-Z-E, place called Wheeze, River Nears.
And what's Wheeze like?
Went to Bridget. It was a small town, smashed up, like, of course, obviously, it's in the front line. And we had to bridge this river and got over that all right. And then what happened then? And of course, obvious skirmishes then. Another place, the final place we got to was Ochtrup near the Rhine, where we linked up with the Americans, the American army. A place called Gildon, we linked up with. Then we came out of that and we went into reserve. And when we reserved, so far we went back about 20 miles into some big castle. There's all displaced persons in there. Polish, more or less. So we got up in this room up there now. You want to know all this, don't you? Mm. Went up in this room now, and we had a big room upstairs. It was the officer, myself, a platoon sergeant, and the clerk and the section. And we got up, we threw all the furniture out the windows. We were about three or four stories up. And we went down to this farmhouse now, and all the Germans used to do, they used to get in the farms, you, up in the roof, they had a big chimney in the roof and a door in it. And you open the door and they're up, hanging up in their sides of bacon, isn't it?
Well, you guessed they were there.
You had a truck underneath. Take the bacon out of the thing and throw it in the truck. Take it back, see?
So you knew the Germans had left it there?
Oh, they'd left it. They'd gone. The civilians, as well. They'd gone. So then... we went down to this village now, and we took a range out of a house, fired a big stove like that, put it on the back of a 3-ton truck, took it down this place in Ochtrup. Now we're in going reserve now. Put the range in, set it up, and cooked all the dinner on it. So this sergeant, Eggie, myself, went down in some cellar in a shop now, and there was two old dears in bed, you see. It was a draper shop. So we went in there and got all the men's underwear out of there, bagged it up, took it with us, And they had lines and lines of pickled eggs and strawberries and all this sort of business. Put it all in the vehicle, took the lot. They were still there. They were petrified watching us doing this. I went to the barber shop. There were open razors in there, soaps and God knows what. Took the lot, all of it, and shared it out between us. Anyway, we got to this castle now. So we're in there now. And we had a new officer posted to it. A man called Masterman, his name was. Lieutenant Masterman, only a second lieutenant, straight up from England. Now he came up then, I had a tablecloth on the table, I had pickled strawberries on there, eggs, everything you could imagine on there. And he said, these army rations are bloody good, aren't they? I said, I'll tell you something now, I said. What you saw on this table, the only thing it's on this table, which is army rations, is a tea, I said. The rest of it is German, eggs and all the rest of it. And that sort of thing. So we were there for about a fortnight, be fitting.
What did you think of this new chap coming out from England?
Didn't have much time to do anything about it, really. I don't think he stopped with our section. He went to the headquarters, I think, after that. And
so how long did you stay in that?
About a fortnight we were in there. Of course, this is coming up the Rhine crossing now.
You had a bit of a rest one.
Oh yeah, that's right. You do have a rest. You come out, you see, you've got to replenish things and all the rest of it.
What was the atmosphere like then? I mean,
Real holiday mood. And of course, this is coming up the Rhine crossing now. And we weren't involved actually with the Rhine crossing. We were on the second wave over. Now then, we're out in the road now. The Navy was involved in this and all. They were bringing barges up over land. Everything was going on. There was a big bridging operation around. With about 5 or 6 bridges went across there. But Army troops engineers built those bridges. You know, they got more equipped than what we were. And all of a sudden, there's a massive roar. And all these aircraft coming over. Liberators, Dakotas and all of this. And now Sergeant Agley was out on the road now. And he goes to this house. Street of German houses, we were billeted in them. Get the barges out here, he said. Let them see this lot. So we kind of all these Germans lined up in the road. He said, what do you think of that lot? He said, and he could speak German. He was speaking to them in German, like, and they didn't know what the hell was going on. And you could see these.
What was he showing them?
Eh? What was showing all these aircraft going on, dropping parachute troops over the Rhine, you see, and of course a lot of them being shot down too, Dakotas especially. And towing gliders, like. And then, of course, the following day we went over then, over the Rhine. Of course, they built bridges pretty quick in those days. I mean, they had the men to do it. They were talking about 500, 600 men working on bridges. And used to build the bridges in section and float them down to where the bridge was being built, you see. Used to build what you call a Class 40 raft. And used to float it down a river then and connect it up with the main bridge to the time we got across. Floating pontoon bridge. We got the other side, and the actual place where we went across was a place called Wesel. And then we went on, of course, everything was moving fast then. I mean, they'd stop, they'd fight for a couple of hours, and they'd go on. But virtually, it was skirmishing. There was no actual fighting. Skirmish, they'd stop you. You fire a blow an armoured vehicle up on the road. Everybody'd stop and see what was going on. And suddenly go forward, a recce column, and go forward and see what was what. And then we got to a place called Ochtrup, and we stopped there for a couple of hours. But then it was virtually going on and on and on all the time, till we got to the River Weser, and then put up a fight there with Marines and all the rest of it, and we bridged that river. But it was so fluid then, it was moving so fast, you couldn't sort of pick out any particular thing. The only thing you could spot out, if you were going to build a bridge and you start about 7 o'clock at night, you'd have an aircraft up watching what you were doing, you see. So we went in, we were wandering around the place, and there's a big factory now outside Ochtrup called a Singer sewing machine factory. You know the Singers, well, it was a German firm, basically. And they were manufacturing camouflage jackets. Now everybody wants a camouflage jacket now, don't they? So everybody's wearing these jackets. Of course, Major Banster came up. He said, get them off as soon as you like. He said, you'd be taking the Germans with those things on, which we would have. So we didn't wear them. So then we went on and on and on and on. And we got over the Weser now and the Elbe. And we're coming up the Elbe now. This is the last bridge now for the end of the war. Now then, we're going to put a big attack in on Hamburg. Now, this is the time where I went on leave. just before that, because leave had started in the January 45. I was one of the last, unfortunately, to go on leave, and one that, unfortunately, to have a flaming accident at the same time. Now, I left my unit about 4 o'clock in the afternoon at a place called Salto, and we were going to stop at Osnabrück overnight, because it's a long journey. We were going to Cali, you see. Anyway, we're going along this road in a 3-ton truck, and an American Jeep tried to pass us. Of course, his hub got caught in our hubs. The lorry hit a tree, rolled down a bank. I had all my teeth smashed up. I had a graft on there, skin like this, all the way along here. Still in cold weather, you can see it, but it's all graft. All my teeth were smashed up. One bloke got killed. And another chap had a, like the infantry used to hang their kit up on bars in the vehicles, you see. Well, one bar went through a bloke's cheek, out here and out this side here. Anyhow, I was evacuated now to a military hospital, a place called Celle in Germany, which is not far from Hanover. From there, then, I was flown by Dakota to the 112th General Hospital in Brussels. Now, the war was virtually coming to an end now. Of course, I was in there in hospital about 6 weeks, off and on. I went to a rehabilitation centre. Now, do you want to listen to this now? Because the war's finished now. Mm. The war is finished now. By the time I come out of there, I go to a Royal Engineers holding camp at a place called Knokke in Belgium, near Blankenberg or Ostend. And I was operating the telephones there and different things like that. And I went on a short course, and then I was told one morning you're going to be posted now to a unit going to Japan, because that's where everybody was going, at the Far East. So I met the chap now in there, one of our own units. He'd been in operation, had an operation of appendicitis, and he was in the same boat as what I was going, being posted. Anyhow, we're walking along the promenade in Knokke now on a Sunday night. And one of our officers is there, because there's a bridging camp there, you see, and he was on a course. He said, "What are you blokes doing here?" I said, "Well, we've been posted." "Where to?" I said, "Oh, overseas somewhere." I said, "Far East." "Oh, I'll soon sort that out," he said. So the next morning, we were on parade now, and we were called off the parade. "You're going back to your unit, wherever that might be." So anyhow, we go back with him. We go to a holding unit now, and it was a place somewhere between, because the division then moved from Hamburg to the Dusseldorf area in the Ruhr, who took over from the Americans. And we stopped at this place. Now, this Sergeant Egli, an advance party from the division, was already there. Sergeant Egli, one of my friends. And Polish prisoners of war broke out of a camp. They were going to kill every German in sight. So we went, there's only about 10 of us in this place, and we went up on this road and mounted two Bren guns up there. And he told them, I told you could speak German, so they could understand German. So he said anyone had moved any further than there, they'd get shot. Now, in the meantime, there was a loud, raucous noise coming from a flat, and there was a German in there with a young girl, and he was playing the German national anthem. You know, that, Uber, Deutschland, Uber Alles, and all that sort of business. So Sergeant Egli picked up a Bren gun and fired at the window. And whether he didn't hit him, but he must have frightened him. He never heard any more like that. He said, "I'll shoot that thing right out." And you could see all the bullet marks going up, because he had these open window things. They used to close in the winter, you know, these things on the side. I don't know exactly what you call them. And he fired all these things, and that was the end of that. Anyhow, we get into Dusseldorf now.
Right, I'll stop you there. It's the end of Reel 5.